Well, we're going to talk about faith this morning. Some of you probably driven up north past Redding to the Shasta area. Can you imagine the Shasta area up there? And of course, if you've been there a few years ago, you'll remember that the place looked like this. It's just absolutely gorgeous. It's a lake that you want to just hang out at. You can camp around it. You can take a houseboat on the lake. Have you ever done that up at Mount Shasta? You can rent a houseboat, have a great time, wonderful vacation. So when you pass through there, it's so gorgeous that you just want to pull off the road and kind of take it in for a while and just enjoy God's beautiful creation. However, if you've been there the last couple of years, you knew that it dried up. It was pretty sad what took place at Shasta Lake the past couple of years because of the drought and the situation. It just, when you went by, you didn't even really want to look at it. You didn't want to pull over. You didn't want to, you know, take time to just enjoy, so to speak, the beauty of the dryness of the lake and the surrounding region there and all of that. You probably, if you were driving through, weren't thinking, you know, I guess we'll have our vacation here this year. We'll get a houseboat. We'll enjoy the lake. And, you know, this will be a lot of fun. Probably none of those thoughts. More like, this is so sad to see this happen. And, of course, part of the reason that you're sad for it is because we are dependent upon this lake. This is the second largest reservoir in California. Our water, much of it comes from Northern California, from this lake, from Mount Shasta Lake. It not only feeds our area, but also the water in the central San Joaquin Valley. The farms there are dependent upon the water coming from this lake. You can go all the way down to Bakersfield, and this is a source of water. So to see it dry up like this, just tragic, not only because of the beauty, but also because we're desperate for the water that comes from the lake. Now, the good news is the last year or so, it has filled back up. If you go there right now, I've been told that it's just absolutely beautiful again. The snow is packed all around the lake, and it's up to 82% level the last I saw. And so it's coming back up again, and then it's a thing of beauty, and so you're right back to just enjoying the lake. If there was a list of things that you did not want to see shrink, then I think that Shasta Lake would be on the things we don't want to see shrink. We don't want to see the waters of Shasta Lake shrink. There are other things you probably put on this list. Maybe you have a special sweater, you don't want to see it shrink, or a special pair of pants that you don't want to see shrink, so you don't throw them in the dryer, you know, on hot, really, really hot, for fear that it's going to come out, be this little miniature thing, it's no longer going to fit. Some of you might be struggling with some of those kind of clothes right now because you threw it in the wash or something. Probably not because of weight, other things, right? Because it was in the wash and it got, into the dryer or whatever. We don't want to see those clothes that we enjoy shrink. We don't want to see our bank account shrink. We don't want to see energy levels shrink. We don't want to shrink our memory. That's right. We don't want to see our memory shrink. So there are probably a lot of things that you could put on things we don't want to see shrink. But I hope if we were to put on this list, the number one thing would be faith. We don't want to see faith shrink. Now, if you grew up, and it doesn't sound like you grew up in a faith home, or maybe you have to come back and tell us more of your story if it was just 8 years ago you came to faith in Jesus. But if you grew up in a faith home and your parents were devoted, or they are devoted to Christ, and you're growing up in this devoted Christian home, your parents don't want to see your faith shrink. If you've come to faith in Jesus in the home that you grew up in, the hope from the parent side of things is that your faith will enlarge, it will increase, that it will not, you know, take a back seat in your life. It will be something that will continue to grow. It's a tragedy when a child grows up in a home of faith, has faith, and then leaves the home and then leaves the faith so that the faith shrinks. That can happen to anybody, not just to children who grow up in a home. It could happen to God's children. The potential of that happening to God's children, I think, quite frankly, in the world that we live in right now, the potential of our faith shrinking is quite high, which is why we're going to look at a passage that speaks to that very issue. It's found in Hebrews chapter 10. And so I want to invite you to take out your Bible this morning and turn there with me. A passage that focuses on the possibility of shrinking faith. Of shrinking faith. Found in Hebrews chapter 10, verses 32 through 39. And if you didn't bring along a Bible, I think we might have one in the pew there, but you can follow along also in the message notes. This is what the passage says, and I think it really speaks to us today. It says, "Remember those earlier days after you had received the light, when you stood your ground in a great contest in the face of suffering. Sometimes you were publicly exposed to insult and persecution. At other times, you stood side by side with those who were so treated. You sympathized with those in prison and joyfully accepted the confiscation of your property because you knew that you yourselves had better and lasting possessions. So do not throw away your confidence. It will be richly rewarded. You need to persevere so that when you have done the will of God, you will receive what he has promised. For in just a very little while, he who is coming will come and will not delay. But my righteous one will live by faith. And if he shrinks back, I will not be pleased with him. But we are not of those who shrink back and are destroyed, but of those who believe and are saved." Now, why is this passage here? I mean, that's a question you always got to ask when you're looking at the Bible, you look at a passage of Scripture, especially when it concerns an audience like here, the Hebrew Christians that were living in Jerusalem and surrounding regions there. The writer of Hebrews, we don't know who that was. Some people conjecture it was Paul the Apostle. Other people say Barnabas. We don't know who the writer was for sure. But the writer of Hebrews cares about these Christians, and he cares about their faith in a faith-challenged world. Now, if you know the world that they were living in, they were living at the time of Nero, and Nero wasn't fond of Christianity. He wanted to do everything he could to get rid of the movement and get rid of Christians. So he was killing them. In fact, John Fox, in his book, Fox's Book of Martyrs, said this: "Nero contrived all manner of punishments for the Christians that the most infernal imagination could design. In particular, he had some sewed up in skins of wild beasts and then worried by dogs until they expired." Now, that's a word we don't usually use anymore, worried by dogs, at least in that kind of context, but the idea is attacked. So they were attacked, as they were in these skins, they were attacked by dogs until they died. Continuing, he said, "And others dressed in shirts made stiff with wax, fixed to axle trees and set on fire in his gardens in order to illuminate them." Can you imagine this? This was his lantern in the garden. Christians burning. "This persecution was general throughout the whole Roman Empire." So these are the kind of conditions that these Christians are living in that the writer of Hebrews is concerned about. And what he's concerned about is whether or not they're going to endure in their faith, whether their faith is going to grow strong, or if they're going to shrink back in their faith, cower in their faith, cower in the corner. Now, let me ask you, have you ever cowered in the corner? Think about this. Campus you're on, the job you're in, the relationships that you share, the neighborhood you're in. Have you ever cowered in the corner? Have you ever shrunk back in your faith? Have you ever had a conversation with somebody where you felt led to talk to them about Jesus Christ, but didn't talk to them about Jesus Christ because you perceived that they might not like it? Have you ever in your heart, you know, just backed off because you knew somebody would object or somebody would have differing opinions or somebody might ridicule you or somebody might label you a Christ follower? And so you shrunk back in your faith. Is there anybody here that has ever had that feeling? Well, I'm going to put my hand up on that. And so when I look at this passage really speaks to us because we are all people living in a culture, especially right now, that's pushing hard back on Christianity and the Christian faith. And what's required in order to not be a person who shrinks in faith is it's required that we have daring faith. Daring faith, the kind of faith that's described here in this passage. And what is daring faith? Let me just give you a few qualities. Number one, daring faith stands strong. It stands strong when it's insulted, when it's persecuted. It doesn't retreat. And so the writer says, remember those earlier days after you had received the light, when you stood, and you might circle the word stood, when you stood your ground in a great contest in the face of suffering. Sometimes you were publicly exposed to insult and persecution. At other times you stood, and again, circle the word stood. You stood side by side with those who were so treated. You sympathized with those in prison, and you joyfully accepted the confiscation of your property. So he's saying to them, listen, you remember those early days when you came to faith in Jesus? And I love the picture that he uses here because he talks about the time that they had received the light in those earlier days. I think that's a great image of a person who comes into relationship with God. They come out of darkness into the light. They receive the light of Jesus Christ, the light of the gospel. We're transferred from the kingdom of darkness into the kingdom of light. And he goes back to those early days, and he said, do you remember those early days when you received the light? And there was suffering for those who were Christ followers, but you stood your ground. You stood strong for Jesus Christ after you came to the light. You endured insults, and you endured persecution. In fact, when you sympathized with others who were people of faith that were in prison for their faith, and your property was confiscated, it didn't faze you. You continued to stand up. You stood firm. You stood strong in your faith. And notice the word contest that's used here. He says, you are in a great contest. Fact is, you're still in a great contest. But this word that is used for contest describes a gladiator contest. And so he wants them to think about standing strong as a gladiator would stand strong in a grueling athletic event in the Colosseum. The only way that this contest could be won would be to stand strong. If you retreat and there's no chance of winning the contest. So he's telling them and reminding them, you know, let's go back to those earlier days. The possibility of you shrinking now, getting past that now means going back to how you used to live when you were standing strong in the faith. Now let me ask you a question. If you've been a Christ follower for a while, after you've been a Christ follower for a while, and if you've attempted to share your faith with others on various occasions, you've probably had a variety of experiences. And no doubt, some of what's been a part of your experiences has been rejection. You've talked about your faith and people have rejected you. They want nothing to do with it. After that happens, there's a stronger possibility that you will shrink back in your faith, that I will shrink back in my faith. We begin, in a sense, kind of measuring possible reactions before we go into, you know, conversations about our faith. And we can begin to shrink. My heroes of the faith are those who continue to stand strong regardless of what the world is saying with regard to their faith. I think of Bob Vernon. Bob Vernon, you talk about somebody who is a hero of faith. Bob Vernon used to be the assistant chief of police of the Los Angeles Police Department. He supervised all the police departments in LA, 18 different police stations, including the oversight of 7,800 officers, 3,000 civilian employees. But in 1992, Bob Vernon was run out of town. You know why he was run out of town? Because of his faith. Because of his Christ-centered teachings. Because he was a man that talked about his faith. Now, he didn't bring that into his arena, but that was in terms of his work. But he very much represented Christ wherever he went and was a part of a church that was very public in their faith as well. People got a hold of some of the teachings that he had done in this church, and they used this against him, and ultimately he lost his position in the Los Angeles Police Department. He was probably going to be the chief of police, but that never happened. But what happened after that was Bob went on and he found Point Man Leadership Institute, a group of highly qualified instructors of various disciplines that go throughout the world teaching character-based ethical leadership seminars. Bob travels in the United States and talks about the need for change in the moral fabric of our nation. His insights come from his Christian ethics. So they're essentially teaching Christian ethics. And since 1994, they've taught nearly 850 seminars in more than 70 countries to more than 70,000 military, government, police, and business leaders. Now to me, that sounds like a guy who hasn't retreated, that he hasn't shrunk in his faith, regardless of the fact that, oh, you know, this could do me in. He's standing strong. There's no retreat there. I think about Tony Romo. Today is a Dallas Cowboy football game. Tony Romo used to be the quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys. He's still a quarterback, but he was injured. I don't know if he's going to play today. Probably not. But the cool thing about Tony is his faith in Jesus Christ, more than the fact that he's an NFL football player. Tony, since dedicating his life to Christ in college, has stood strong for his faith, which means he's willingly and boldly talked about his faith, even though many people have advised him to stay quiet about his faith. He hasn't. Romo's done just the opposite as he unashamedly continues to give glory to God, which he so rightly deserves. Do you recognize this couple? Chip and Joanna Gaines, they're stars of the HD TV series Fixer Upper. It's Tuesday night, big event. They've got a best-selling book out right now. Well, this couple, they are Christ followers. And they see their show as a platform to demonstrate to others the love of Christ, that Christ might be seen in them and their work and all they're doing. Their platform has given them the opportunity to talk about faith, and in their talking about faith and representing Christ, even recently, they've been criticized for their faith, for their Christian stance, especially on the family and on marriage. And if you have followed them just in recent days, what you're going to see is they haven't retreated. They haven't cowered in the corner. They haven't wavered in their faith. They've continued to express their faith in God and their love for others regardless. They're standing strong. And I believe that God wants the same for us, doesn't he? He doesn't want us to shrink back. He doesn't want us to cower in the corner. We're going to be people of daring faith. We've got to stand strong, regardless of the world that we're standing in. Secondly, go on, verse 34, pick it up there. You sympathize with those in prison, and you joyfully accepted the confiscation of your property because you knew that you yourselves had better and lasting possessions. So do not throw away your confidence. It will be richly rewarded. You need to persevere so that when you have done the will of God, you will receive what he's promised. For in just a very little while, he who is coming will come and will not delay. He talks about a second matter. Daring faith looks ahead. Daring faith not only stands strong, but daring faith looks ahead. What does this faith look ahead to? Do you see it there? It looks ahead with confidence to the Lord's promised rewards. That there's a reward coming. And so, in recognizing there is a reward that is coming, it gives us confidence. He's saying, as you continue to look ahead, it gives you confidence to stand strong, to keep pressing on. It gives you perseverance, which means the ability to endure the pain that you're in right now, to get through the hardship and the suffering so that you don't give up. And this confidence and perseverance are byproducts of, he says, a better and lasting possessions, which are coming. You don't have them yet. You have the promise of them coming. And as you focus on that which is ahead, it gives you confidence and it gives you perseverance to stand strong right now. Somebody said this. They said, if you want to feel rich, just count the things you have that money can't buy. And if you think about that from a Christian perspective, there are things that a Christ follower has that money can't buy, and these are things that can't be taken away from us. So a relationship with God. We believe that a person can have a relationship with God, not because we pay for it, not by our works, but because what Christ did, it's a gift. We receive the gift, and in receiving this gift, we're given life, we're given forgiveness for sins, we're given a destiny, we're given a spiritual fortune, we're given eternal life, and we're given a relationship with God and Jesus Christ now and forever. How about that? I mean, that is something that obviously gives us riches. How's a person able to stand strong? Well, by focusing on the better and the lasting possessions that will ultimately be ours in Jesus Christ when he comes. And he entrusts all of this to us. Now, as you look at the scriptures and you think about people in the scriptures who stood strong, well, Jesus Christ comes right to the top of the list, right? He didn't cave in. He didn't back off. In Hebrews chapter 12, remind you, we're in Hebrews 10 right here, but in two chapters from now, we're going to get into chapter 12, and chapter 12 follows what we're going to jump into the next 6 weeks, mainly chapter 11, the Hall of Faith, this great faith chapter. But following that, chapter 12, you pick up this account of the importance of endurance. Because what the writer of Hebrews is trying to do is help these Christ followers who are in the midst of persecution in a world that's not favorable to their faith. He's trying to help them endure, okay? Get through this thing. And he comes back to this subject again in chapter 12. And in chapter 12, he says, therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, and the witnesses that we're surrounded by are all of those people that he describes in chapter 11 who lived with great faith. He says, so since we have all these people, these examples of great faith, which we want to follow, let us also lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance. We got to do what they did. We got to run with endurance the race that's set before us. Looking here? No, looking to Jesus, the founder and the perfecter of our faith. He's the guy that got the whole thing going. He's the one that's going to continue to grow our faith. And then it says this, who for the joy that was set before him. He's thinking about the ahead, what's yet to come. Who for the joy set before him, he endured. That's what we got to do is endure. He endured because he was focused on what was yet to come, the joy. He endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such hostility from sinners. Anybody having to endure some hostility from sinners? How do you get through it? He endured such hostility against himself, and we need to do the same, considering him, so that we may not grow weary or faint-hearted in your struggle against sin. You've not yet resisted to the point of shedding your blood. You know, it's very possible, and this is the reason this is here, it's very possible in this world that after you take it on the chin enough times, you're going to grow weary and faint-hearted, and you're going to say, you know what, I'm done with this. I'm done with this Christian life. I'm done with, you know, trying to represent Christ to others. I'm just going to go cower in the corner. I'm going to shrink back from my faith. That's very possible. But he's saying, don't let that happen. And what will keep that from happening is you focusing on the better and the lasting possessions. By focusing on what is yet to come. Because as you focus on what is yet to come, look at this, you won't grow weary. That's physical exhaustion. I'm done with this. And you won't become faint-hearted, or some of the translations say lose heart. You won't lose heart, meaning you won't be emotionally drained. You won't be emotionally empty. Anybody here this morning feeling emotionally empty? It's possible that obviously we can be physically drained and we can be emotionally empty. And this passage is saying the answer to that kind of fatigue in our lives is to look at Jesus. To look at the lasting and the promised possessions that are to come. Daring faith keeps its focus on Christ. Remember the Apostle Paul? Paul in 2 Timothy chapter 4, verses 7 and 8 said this. This is at the end of his life. I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith. There's no shrinking there. And now there is in store for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will award to me on that day, and not only to me, but to also to all who have longed for his appearing. So he's believing there's coming a reward, and this reward has motivated him to stay strong in the midst of the race that God had him running. He didn't fall out of the race, he finished the race. Just before the worship service this morning, I got a text from Nate, and it was a picture. It had a picture of him with a ribbon around his neck because he finished the race. He finished the half marathon there. If you weren't here at the beginning of the hour this morning, there's several people from our church, Shannon Durand and others, they ran Daniel Kang. I'm not sure who else. I probably get in trouble here by start naming all the names. But there are all these people down in Disneyland. They wanted to run this race at 5:30 a.m. this morning. They wanted to go out there and run this race, which they did. And from what I been told so far, they finished the race. That's the whole point, right? I mean, some people are like, yeah, I'm going to better my time. Not Nate. He was just, I just want to finish the race. And that really is the picture, right? We don't want to be out of the race. We want to finish the race more than anything else. The hope is that we will finish the race, but it's going to require us to keep our focus ahead. Jesus Christ. I don't know if you watched any of the Summer Olympics, Rio Summer Olympics, but there was something that happened in the second qualifying meet of the heat of the women's 5,000-meter race. And it really speaks to what we're talking about here this morning. So I want you just to see this little clip, this short clip. Watch the screen.
So we're just about all set for the second heat in the women's 5,000 meters. All eyes will be on Almaz Ayana, a new world record holder over 10,000 meters. Nikki Hamlin there, she's had a Commonwealth medal over the years. D'Agostino of the USA giving the camera a little wave. Two heats, five fastest loser spot.
Ayana is now leaving the back straight, and the rest of the pack has just entered the back straight. Oops, there's a fall at the back of the field here. There's a couple of runners down. And the other athlete who's fallen has decided to stop back there with her, and she is in a lot of trouble, D'Agostino.
It's D'Agostino and Nikki Hamlin. Hamlin stumbles on the inside line and then a really nasty fall and an ankle problem there for D'Agostino.
The American was initially showing more concern and then realised how much pain she was in.
D'Agostino is going to finish this race. It's going to be a very, very painful mile for the American. Brave performance to carry on. D'Agostino is being passed now by Almaz Ayana. It really will be an emotional finish to her race, which will come way after the top five qualifiers. Abby D'Agostino, tears of frustration, And maybe, hopefully, one day, she will look back on this as a moment of great pride, embraced by the woman whose aspirations also came to an end, the ankle clearly hurting. As she decided to finish the race, and that is the very embodiment of the Olympic spirit, alive and well here in Rio in 2016.
I love that. I love the thought that this is the embodiment of the Olympic spirit. And really, that is the embodiment of the Christian life. We don't give up. We don't bail out of the race because things are hard. But we keep our eyes focused on the author and the perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. And this writer gets it. He's saying, you know, listen, I know that things are hard right now for you, but stand strong. Look ahead. And then he adds, verses 38 and 39, but my righteous one will live by faith, and if he shrinks back, I will not be pleased with him. But we are not of those who shrink back and are destroyed, but of those who believe and are saved. Daring faith also brings pleasure. Brings pleasure to God, verse 38, and it brings pleasure from God in verse 39. And I want you to notice this contrast is there in verse 39, the contrast between destruction and salvation. When you first look at this translation, and we're reading out of the New International Version, it suggests that this salvation is connected to a person not shrinking back. Now, if that's the case, if you're a Christ follower, then every one of us is in trouble. If our salvation is connected to not shrinking back, we're in trouble. Because we've all shrunk. We've all shrunk in our faith. We all have, at times, cowered in the corner. Fortunately, I don't think that's what this passage is saying. If you look at the New American Standard Bible or you look at the English Standard Version of the Bible, you'll find that instead of saying, but of those who believe and are saved, the translation is to those who have faith, and then it says to the persevering of the soul. So the connection here is not to our eternity, but to the immediate transformation of the soul. And what he is trying to help them realize is that how they live now is ultimately going to bring pleasure to God. But also, there's a reward in this. And this isn't a salvation experience, but this is a reward of what happens to our soul. One of the benefits of living with daring faith is the benefit to the soul, to the preservation, or to the salvation, or to the transformation of the soul. Some years ago, Chichi Rodriguez was a professional golfer, played on the tour, but he at times felt that, you know, he could go into hiding and he, because of the dangers that they lived with. And he said this, my father used to say, a hero dies one time, a coward dies all the time. What was he saying? Cowardice kills a person. And that's what this text is saying. Cowardice is going to kill the Christian life. Really, C.T. Studd got this. He exemplified this daring faith. If you know anything about C.T. Studd, you know that this is a guy, he lived in the 1860s through 1931 era. But you know that he sold everything. He sold everything as a Christ follower to take the gospel to the nations. His family and friends tried to dissuade him from going overseas, but he felt like that's where God wanted to use him, so he went anyway. He went to China, to India. At 50 years of age, he was contemplating retiring, but he decided against it, so he went to Sudan, where he spent the remaining years of his life. His work became the stepping stone for the spread of the gospel to Africa, Asia, and South America. On one occasion, Studd said this, should such men as we fear Before the whole world, I, before the sleepy, lukewarm, faithless, namby-pamby Christian world, we will dare to trust our God. Now, by the way, let me just help you understand what he's saying there. He's setting in contrast how many Christians were living at the time. Namby-pamby Christians. And he's saying, we're not going to live like that. I'm not going to live like that. We're going to dare to trust God. And we will die for him, and we will do it with his joy unspeakable, singing aloud in our hearts. We will 1,000 times sooner die trusting only in our God than live trusting in man. And when we come to this position, the battle's already won, and the end of the glorious campaign in sight, we will have the real holiness of God, not the sickly stuff of talk and dainty words and pretty thoughts. We will have a masculine holiness, one of daring faith and works for Jesus Christ. When I first read that, I thought of your message last week, Dan. Man up, you know. Man, we got to stand in the gap. Manly holiness, a daring faith in Jesus Christ. Do you think C.T. Studd was thriving in his soul? Do you think that he was pleasing to God? Yes. He had this unspeakable singing that was happening in his heart. The antidote to shrinking faith is daring faith. And that antidote will lead to a vibrant Christian life that will impact others for Jesus Christ, so that they see the beauty of Christ in a world that is dry and thirsty.